Let us invite Devan to come to listen to Dhamma talk first. Samanta chakkhavalesu atra gacchantu devata sadhammam muni rajasa sunantu sagamokadam dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammaha sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammaha sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammaha sambuddhassa. So, good evening, everybody. Today, I choose a very interesting title and yet very difficult to share, very difficult to teach, very difficult for you to understand fully. However, I will try my best. So, today's title is When an arahant dies, where does he go? This question has been asked by many, many people, including during Buddha's time. However, before I explain to you, before I tell you the answer directly, I have to tell you first. When an ordinary person dies, where does he go first? Only then you can understand when an arahant dies, where does he go? Okay? So when a person dies, during his dying moment, owing to the karma he had performed either in this life or in past life. That karma, one karma, is potent enough and is going to produce its result. We call productive karma, will produce rebirth. So that karma will ripen during dying moment. And that karma will be manifested through one type of sign. So during dying moment, a person will see one of the three signs. One is karma. And the second one is gati nimitta, and the third one kama nimitta. What is karma? Karma means an action we have performed before we die, or in this very life, or in past life. Let's say, now I'm giving a talk, and this is good karma. And if this karma ripen during my dying moment, then I will see as if I myself, as if I am giving a talk again. Just like a movie, you see a movie. This is called karma. And second one, karma nimitta. For example, a butcher. A butcher, he used to kill, slaughter animals. So during dying moment, he might see a knife. A knife he used to kill animal. So karma nimitta means an instrument he used to perform his habitual karma. Okay, this is called karma nimitta. And the next one is, the third one is gati nimitta. Gati means destination. So gati nimitta will show that where, indicates where you are going to reborn. If you are going to reborn in heaven, you will see heavenly beings. If you are going to reborn in hell, then you will see hell being and so on. So during an ordinary person's dying moment, he will see one of these three nimitta. And at that moment, let's say karma nimitta, or let's say gati nimitta, he see heavenly beings. And at that dying moment, his consciousness will hold on to this nimitta. Every consciousness when arises must hold on to one thing. There's no a time when consciousness does not hold on to anything. So during dying moment, the consciousness will quickly grasp, will quickly hold on to this gati nimitta. And since he is an ordinary person, when he perform karma at the time, let's say when he perform wholesome karma of offering flower to the Buddha, at that time he prayed. He prayed, may this meritorious deed become a condition, be a condition for me to reborn in heaven. So at that time, his karma is rooted in ignorance. What is ignorance? Ignorance, in this case, he doesn't understand every existence is suffering. If you have listened to my talk last 2 days, Buddha said, birth is suffering. Five aggregates of clingings are suffering. So ignorance does not understand every birth is suffering. Therefore, he pray for new life. He pray for life in heaven. And at the same time, when he performed the karma, let's say offering flower to the Buddha, he prayed for new life, and he also craved for renewed existence. Because the ignorant does not understand every life is suffering, therefore crave for renewed existence. And the karma now manifests as gati nimitta during a person's dying moment. And when the consciousness, when this dying moment's person's consciousness hold on to this nimitta, and the karmic force rooted in ignorance and craving push the consciousness. Push that consciousness forward. When the karmic force rooted by ignorance and craving, which are the root cause for rebirth, then the consciousness push one step forward and become rebirth consciousness. Are you with me? Okay. So in this case, why this rebirth consciousness? Why rebirth consciousness arises? Why? Because the root causes for rebirth, ignorance and craving, are still there. Okay. So ignorance is not knowing the Four Noble Truths, especially the truth of suffering. He doesn't understand every life is suffering. When there is birth, there is aging, sickness and death, and sorrow, lamentation and so on. So ignorant does not understand the truth of suffering. And because he ignorant does not understand, then craving arises. Craving arises, and there are two types of craving that cause rebirth. One is craving for sensual pleasures. So he pray to be reborn in heaven so that he can enjoy sensual pleasures. And another craving is craving for renewed existence. He doesn't want his life to become extinguished. He wants his life to continue forever. This is called craving for renewed existence. These two are the main root causes for rebirth. Okay. And just now I mentioned that consciousness inclined to take a stand on object and stand attached to it. So living a person's dying moment, his consciousness now attached and hold on to this gati nimitta, that is the heavenly picture, a nimitta, a sign to show the heavenly world. And his consciousness attach and hold on to this nimitta. And a karmic force push his consciousness forward. And rebirth take place. Okay? And because consciousness is dependent, as I say, that consciousness now is dependent, and so the new five aggregates are building up. Five aggregates, same as birth. When there is birth, there is five aggregates. So this subject is not easy to understand. You must understand what is five aggregates. Otherwise, if you cannot understand what is five aggregate, then you make sure you know five aggregates same as birth. Jati, birth. So where now? Where five aggregates are produced depend on types of karma performed. Now we say the karmic force push the consciousness forward, then rebirth consciousness arise together with five aggregate. But where the rebirth consciousness arises depend on what type of karma you perform. So there are three types of karma performed. One is called sense sphere karma. The second one is called fine material sphere karma. And the third one is immaterial sphere karma. Okay. So sense sphere karma, including wholesome, can be divided into wholesome and unwholesome. The wholesome one including generosity, listening to Dhamma talk, morality, the service to the needy, and service to the community, and having the right view, and so on. So when a person performs such wholesome sense sphere karma, and his rebirth consciousness will arise in sense sphere realm. Sense sphere realm including human being and devas, heavenly beings. But if he performs unwholesome sense sphere karma like killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, telling lies and so on, then his rebirth consciousness will arise in unhappy destination in four woeful state, including animal world, hungry ghost, asura and hell. So where the new consciousness arises depend on the karma performed. Okay? In case then he has jhana, first jhana up to fourth jhana, This is his wholesome karma. Then that consciousness will arise in five material world. If he has the immaterial jhana, then his consciousness will arrive in immaterial world. Okay, are you with me? Okay, so I will proceed. Now, how about the case of an arahant? Just now I mentioned it's the case for ordinary person who still have ignorance, who still have craving. How about the case of an arahant? So where does arahant go after death? We must understand arahant, why a person is called arahant. Because he has uprooted two root causes for rebirth. What are the two root causes? Ignorance and craving. So now arahant has uprooted ignorance and craving, then after he passed away, where should he reborn? This question also had been asked by a ascetic called Vachagota. He asked Buddha, Venerable Sir, when a bhikkhu's mind is liberated from ignorance and craving, Master Gotama, where does he reappear after death? You come here just want to know the answer, right? Okay. But before I give you the answer, let me talk about the idea of self first. This question is not properly asked. Why? Because this question has already assumed there is a self. Let's say he asked where he reappeared after that. Where he. So this question already assumes there is a self. Usually such question Buddha never answer. Buddha say, your question is not properly posed. But this time Buddha answer him. So before Buddha answer him, I would like to explain to you first. Because this question already assumes there is a self, I want to tell you what is the idea of self first. According to Hindu, this self is called Atman, Atma or Atman. What in general is suggested by soul, even we Chinese also believe there is soul in us. There's a cell in us. So what in general is suggested by soul, self, ego or Atman is that in men, in woman and man, or in any human being, there is a permanent, everlasting and absolute entity. We all believe in that, right? That's why we say, next life I want to reborn in heaven, next life I want to become a human, a woman, next life I want to become a man. Because we already assume there is a permanent, everlasting, absolute entity that can transmigrate from one life to another life. Not only Hindu, we Asian, we Chinese also have such belief. And this soul, what we believe, there's an everlasting entity in every mind, in every man's body. And this is called soul. And this soul or Atma goes through many lives, till it is completely purified and becomes finally united with God or Brahma. This is Hindus' belief. We Chinese believe that there's eternal, there's also soul transmigrate from one place to another place, then finally don't know where the soul goes. Because we are not Hindu religion. But Hindu say that there's everlasting, permanent soul inside the mind and body, and that need to be purified. That soul need to be purified. They say this, therefore, Hindu people, they practice a lot of meditation. We Chinese practice very less meditation. We Chinese are not spiritual. Hindu people are very spiritual because of their belief. The belief there's a soul, that soul transmigrate from one life to one to another life, and that soul need to be purified. How to purify that soul? By meditation. Therefore, Hindu people are very spiritual, they spend a lot of time for meditation because they want to purify the soul so that it can finally united with the God or Brahma they believe. But we Chinese people, we also believe there's a soul. But finally, where the soul go, we do not know. We do not know. And this soul or self in man, in us, is the thinker of the thoughts, fueler of sensation, and receiver of rewards and punishments for all its actions, good or bad. Such a concept is called the idea of self. So when we do something bad, we're very afraid that bad karma, when ripened, will come back to us. We think it's the same person, it's a soul that received that punishment. This is called the idea of self. Okay. How about Buddha's view about self? One day, Vachagota comes to the Buddha and asks, Venerable Gotama, is there a self? Buddha silent. The Buddha is silent. Then Vachagota asks again, Venerable Gotama, is there no self? Then the Buddha remains silent. And Vachagota was so disappointed. Was so disappointed and went away. At the time, Venerable Ananda was with Buddha. And Venerable Ananda was very anxious. Then he asked Buddha, he said, Sir, you can answer his question very easily. Why you keep silent? You should answer him, why you keep silent? And Buddha said, if I say there is a self, then this side with those who declare the view of eternality. And if I say there's no self, this also side with those who declare annihilation view. Then Buddha say again, similarly, if I say there is a self, then this against with my teaching, sabbe dhamma anatta, all dhamma are no self. And if I say there is no self, and this Vachagota, the one who asked question, this Vachagota has very strong view of self. And he already very confused. If I say there's no self, then he become more and more confused. And he will say, previously I have a self, I have soul, I have self. Now I become no more. Then who am I? Who am I? So this Vachagota will go crazy. He will be very sad, sorrow, beating his heart, become more and more confused, and finally he will go crazy. Because previously I have one self, I depend on this self. Now Buddha told me there's no self, then who am I? Tell me who am I? So if he keep on thinking of such question, he will go crazy. So out of compassion for him, I keep silent. So from this Buddha's, you see Buddha's, from here we can see Buddha's question. Not every question should be answered. Buddha think of his benefit. If he cannot understand such question, I tell the truth, it's not beneficial for him. So when I read this question, when I read this answer, now I start to think. Today I give a talk, is it suitable or not? After I tell you the result, everybody become more confused and leave the Dhamma. Then it's my fault because I'm not skillful enough. However, I know I come to the end. I know I come to the end of the topic and depend on your wisdom, whether you can comprehend it or not. Okay. So, why Buddha didn't want to tell him there's no self? Because he doesn't want his mind go to crazy. And Buddha said, oh, bhikkhus, this idea that I may not be in the future, no more, no more rebirth. I may not have anybody already. I may not be anybody already. This idea is very frightening to the uninstructed worldling. Those who have not yet exposed themselves to the teaching of the Buddha, to the cause and effect, not yet exposed themselves to the dependent origination and the idea of no self, the idea of I may not be in the future, is very frightening. This is what Buddha said. I give you an example. When I was in USA, and one of the students is learning four elements meditation. The body is made up by four element meditation. So when she keep on discern the four elements, four elements, earth element, water element, fire element, and wind element in the body again and again, again and again for many days. Then finally, she reached a state that she cannot see anybody. She cannot see she, herself, a person, a being. She only see the four elements arising and passing away. Then she quickly came to me, crying, 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 and crying. I said, what happened to you? She said that, it's so frightening. I cannot see self. I cannot see there's any self in me. Only four elements arising and passing away. So her experience also already tell us, it's very frightening when you realize there's no self. Now we can accept it because it's only theory. It's only theory only. When you really experience it, you were like her, crying for many days. Not only she. I have so many students, when they really see no self, most of them stop. They say, I want to stop for a while. I cannot take it anymore. They don't want to continue already. Therefore, Buddha also said, this idea of no self is very frightening to the uninstructed worldling. Uninstructed worldling means those who don't have the Dhamma base, who never listen to Buddha's teaching, who never understand dependent origination, who never understand cause and effect. The idea of no self can make a person go crazy. Okay? Why is this so? Because there are two ideas are psychologically very deep rooted in human. One is self-protection. For self-protection, man has created God, on whom he depends for his own protection, safety, and security. So when we are in helpless state, we like to pray. Pray to the God. May God protect me. May Buddha protect me. May Deva protect me. So that the mind has something to rely on. just like a child relies on his parent. So when we are helpless, especially when we meet with so many misery in life, then the mind is not strong enough, then we want to ask for something. Especially ask for God, whether it exists or not, we don't care. Just pray, ask God to protect us. So this is called self-protection. And because of this idea, then we have the God. Who see the God? Nobody know. Okay. And the second one, the second idea, which is deeply rooted in humans, is self-preservation. For self-preservation, man has conceived the idea of an immortal soul or Atman, which will live eternally. We want to preserve ourselves. We don't want this self to be destroyed. We want this self go one life to another life, to another life, and live eternally. And because of these two ideas, self-protection and self-preservation, that we don't want to hear there's no self. Against the idea of no self, against these two, deep rooted in our heart, self-protection and self-preservation. Okay. Now let us go back to what Buddha's answer to Vacchagota. Vacchagota asked Buddha, when an arahant dies, Master Gotama, where does he reappear after death? And Buddha answered, the term reappears does not apply, Vaccha. Then Vaccha asked again, then he does not appear, Arahant? After dying, he does not reappear, Master Gotama? Then Buddha answered again, the term does not reappear does not apply, Vaccha. He's not satisfied, so he asks again. Then he both reappears and does not reappear. I don't know what he means, Master Gotama. Then Buddha say, the term both reappears and does not reappear does not apply, Vaccha. And he's not satisfied again, and ask another philosophy question. Then he neither reappears nor does not reappear, Master Gotama. And Buddha said, the term neither reappears nor does not reappear does not apply, Vaccha. Now, assume you are Vaccha, what do you think? Now, you are Vaccha, you ask this four question and Buddha gives you such answer, what do you think? Of course you are not satisfied, right? And Vaccha said that, Master Gotama, previously, when we have conversation, I start to develop confidence in you. Now you give me this four answers, all my confidence in you lost. I have no more confidence in you anymore. This is what Vaccha said. I become very confused now. Okay, then what Buddha answer? Buddha said, for this Dhamma, Vaccha, is very profound, hard to see and hard to understand, peaceful and sublime, unattainable by mere reasoning, subtle to be experienced by the wise only. So this Dhamma is only, you cannot think only, just by reasoning you cannot understand. This Dhamma is to be experienced by the wise person. And it's hard for you to understand it when you hold another view. So what is the view of Vacchagota? The view of self. He hold the view of self because he's a Hindu. Hindu hold the Atman, the view of Atman. This Atman will go one life to another life, then finally this Atman had to be purified and united with their God, Brahma. So you hold another view. You come and ask me with your deep rooted the view of self. Then how can you understand? Of course you cannot understand. And also you accept another teaching, Hindu teaching. And you pursue a different training. Like all this Brahma, they pursue, maybe they practice Samatha. They practice Samatha so they can go to Brahma world. So their soul can unify with the Brahma. So you pursue different teaching. You do not practice, you pursue different training. You do not undertake vipassana. You do not undertake insight to see things as they really are. Then how can you understand? Right? And you follow a different teacher. The teacher teach the unification with the God. I teach differently. So of course you cannot understand. And this Dhamma is so profound and so hard to see unless you practice yourself. Only then you can understand. This is what Buddha's answer. Okay? Then, so after Buddha tell him, answer him in the four way, not applicable. This question, the term reappear, not applicable. The term does not reappear, not applicable. The term neither reappear nor reappear, not applicable. Then Buddha now counter question him. This is the skillfulness of the Buddha. Since you don't understand, now I counter question you, you give me your answer. Then you can understand. Okay. So Buddha said, if someone were to ask you, Vacha, when that fire, no. So when someone asks you, Buddha counter question him, say, Vacha, if a fire burn in front of you, do you know the fire burn in front of you? We answer, sure, of course. He said, yes, of course. And when that fire before you was extinguished, first burning, now was extinguished. Sorry, I think I missed one step. You don't have to see this slide. So when that fire extinguished, do you know? Vacha say, yes, I know. Then Buddha asked again, when that fire before you was extinguished, to which direction did it go? To the east, to the west, to the north, to the south? Being asked thus, what would you answer? Let me repeat again. First, the fire is burning. Do you know? Yes, I know. When fire is extinguished, do you know? Yes, I know. Now Buddha asks, okay. Now somebody asks you, when the fire before you was extinguished, where, to which direction did it go? To the east, to the west, to the north, to the south? Being asked thus, what would you answer? Before I tell you Vachagota's answer, I also would like to ask you, what's your answer? I want to ask the audience, what's your answer? Anybody want to try? What he say? Not applicable. Very good. Excellent. Buddha say exactly what you say. No, this Vacha answer exactly what you say. That does not apply. Previously, Buddha answered him, that does not apply. Then Vacha was very unsatisfied. Now he himself said, that does not apply, Master Gotama. The fire burn independent on its fuel of grass and sticks. When that is used up, no more glass, no more stick, If it does not get any more fuel, no, you don't give more stick or grass, no more fuel, being without fuel is reckoned as extinguished. Can you accept this idea or not? Yes or no? Okay. So we compare this an ordinary person. When an ordinary person, why he can take rebirth? Why he take rebirth, an ordinary person? Just now I explained to you already. Why he take rebirth? Because of the ignorance and craving. So ignorance and craving is a fuel, lan liao. Now, this fuel extinguished. A person has destroyed all the ignorance and craving, and he does not get any more ignorance and craving. Being without ignorance and craving, when Arahant died, where he goes? Where he goes? Then you should say, this question is not applicable. Right? Not applicable. You only can say it is reckoned as extinguished because he has no more fuel, no more ignorance, and no more craving. Okay. Then Buddha said, so too, Vaccha. The Tathagata has abandoned that material form, feeling, perception, volition, and consciousness by which one describing the Tathagata might describe him. So Buddha, Tathagata or Arahan, Arahan is only a name. A person consists of five aggregates, right? Now, an Arahan, when he died, he has abandoned that body, has abandoned feeling, has abandoned perception, has abandoned volition, and has abandoned consciousness by which one call him an Arahan, a Tathagata, a Buddha. Right? Now Tathagata has cut it off at the root, cut the attachment, cut the ignorance at the root, done away with it so that it's no longer subject to future arising. No more arise. Okay? And the Tathagata is liberated from reckoning in terms of these five aggregates, Vaccha. He is profound, immeasurable, unfathomable, like the ocean. The term reappears does not apply. The term does not reappear does not apply. And the term neither reappear nor reappear all does not apply to him. I don't know how much you can understand, right? Okay. Then another question comes. Okay, all these are very profound questions and very few speakers will talk about this. Because if he talk about this one, he give himself a hard time. Okay? Then can we say that an Arahan is annihilated after that? Just now we say he does not apply, does not appear. Not apply also does not appear. Now let's say we ask another question. Can we say that an Arahan is annihilated after that? Yes or no? I want your answer, yes or no? Yes or no? No. Then how to say when Arahant died? Well, how to say? How to describe him? It's very important for you. Next time people ask you this question, you know how to answer already. Okay. So, Can we say that an arahant is annihilated after death? Huh? This question also been asked during Buddha's time. There's a monk called Yamaka, Venerable Yamaka. He told his fellow monk, he said that, as I understand the teaching explained by the Blessed One, a monk with no more defilements on the breakup of the body is annihilated, perishes, and does not exist after death. Do you think this view correct or not? Yes or no? Don't know. Okay? Don't know. So when he declared his view, many monks who had right view told him that, no, Yamaka, you should not tell like that. Buddha never say like that. You should not tell like that. But Yamaka said, no, 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 this is what I understand Buddha's teaching. It is like that. So they keep on arguing. Then finally, the monk cannot convince him. Then they reported, this time not reported to the Buddha, they reported to Venerable Sariputta. Venerable Sariputta, his wisdom is second to the Buddha. He is able to answer this question. Then when the Venerable Sariputta go to him, go to Yamaka, in order to help him to remove this wrong view. Okay? Then Venerable Sariputta asked, do you tell like that? When an arahant dies, he's annihilated. Then Yamaka said, yes. Then Venerable Sariputta started to question him. So sometimes we cannot answer. We know our answer cannot satisfy people. We let them answer themselves. This is called skillful mean. So he asked him. Venerable Sariputta asked Yamaka, how do you construe this, my friend Yamaka? Is form constant or inconstant? Venerable Sariputta used five aggregates because we always assume five aggregates as a person, right? We assume five aggregates as a being, as a he, as she. She, he, a person, a being are conventional truth. What actually exists is five aggregates. So Buddha used five aggregate way to question him. So he asked, is form constant or inconstant? Is form permanent or impermanent? Even we also can answer, impermanent, right? So Yamaka asked, inconstant, my friend. Then Venerable Sariputta asked again, and is that which is inconstant easeful or stressful? Yamaka said, stressful, suffering. Stressful means suffering, stressful, my friend. And is it proper to regard what is inconstant, stressful, subject to change as this is mine, this is myself, this is what I am? Then Yamaka said, no, my friend. Okay, now let us see again. The question is very interesting. The answer is very, very excellent, very, very good. Then Venerable Sariputta asked again, what do you construe this? Do you regard form as the Tathagata? What's your answer? Do you regard form as Tathagata? Do you regard four elements as Tathagata or not? Or do you regard four elements as you or not? Yes or no? Yes or no? Please answer me. I thought the answer is very easy. Do you regard four elements as yourself or not? No. How can it be myself, right? So no. Then he asked again, do you regard feeling as Tathagata? Do you regard feeling as yourself? Feeling equal to yourself? If you answer yes, then you have the idea of self. So no. And do you regard perception as a self, as Tathagata, or as yourself? No. He answered five aggregate. He asked in term of five aggregate one by one. Then Yamaka answer no. Now Venerable Sariputta ask again, how do you construe this? Do you regard the Tathagata as being in form? Let us change the word Tathagata. Do you regard yourself as inside the form, as being in form or not? No. If you have little bit understanding of the Buddha, you will say no one. Even theoretically, you will answer no. Okay? Or elsewhere than form. Or the Buddha has nothing to do with form. Elsewhere than form. Or do you construe that, do you regard the Tathagata as being in feeling or elsewhere than feeling or without feeling? Or do you regard Tathagata in perception or elsewhere than perception? Do you regard the Tathagata in fabrication or elsewhere than fabrications? Or do you regard Tathagata in consciousness or elsewhere than consciousness? Yamaka say no. No. Then last another question. Or do you regard the Tathagata as that which is without form? No. Tathagata or we ourselves have four elements. So we cannot say that we are without form, right? So do you regard Tathagata as that which is without feeling? No, we have feeling, right? So do you regard the Tathagata as that which is without perception, without fabrications, without consciousness? No. Okay? I don't know how far you can get it, Okay. Then Venerable Sariputta give a very good conclusion. He said, my friend Yamaka, when you can't pin down the Tathagata as a truth, as it really exists. So now you all answer me, no, 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 no. So you also cannot tell me who is Tathagata. You cannot pin down the Tathagata as a truth, or he is really exists, or Tathagata as reality, even in this present life. You cannot tell me. Then is it proper for you to declare, as I understand the teaching explained by the Blessed One, a monk with no more defilements on the breakup of the body is annihilated, perishes, and does not exist after death? In fact, this question, if you are smart enough, you also should understand, this question is already assumed there is a self. Therefore he said, when a monk with no more refinement, he is annihilated. A self is annihilated and perishes. So this question already assumes there's a self. Therefore, Venerable Sariputta using five aggregate to tell you. Five aggregate are impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering, can you regard it as a self? Then Yamaka say, cannot. No. Okay. Now Venerable Sariputta asks him, okay, then since Yamaka say no, previously he say yes. He say when Arahant pass away, he is annihilated, perishes, and does not exist after death. Now, Venerable Sariputta, after explain to him in terms of five aggregate, impermanent, suffering, and non-self, and five aggregate doesn't mean Buddha. And Buddha also cannot without five aggregate. Then he cannot pin out there's a real person. He cannot pin down the Buddha is a real person, Arahant is a real person. Then how can you say this person die, after die, he's annihilated? And Yamaka answers, no. He says, Venerable Sir, previously I am ignorant. Now after listen to your talk, now I become enlightened already. I become enlightened. I have break through the Dharma already. The insight arose in me already. Now I understand completely the Dharma already. But Venerable Sariputta still doubt little bit whether what he understand correct or not. Let me counter question him again. Okay. Then Venerable Sariputta say, okay, now if somebody tell you when a monk with no more defilements on the break up of the body, where he goes, where does he go? How you answer? I should let you answer first. I have been talking for 1 hour already. And I don't know whether you understand or not. If you can answer, it means that you understand. If you cannot answer, it means that still thinking of it. So how should you answer?
He didn't come, so he didn't go.
Okay, this is your answer. Let's see what Yamaka's answer. Okay. Then he said that, Yamaka said that, I would answer, form is inconstant, feeling, perception, fabrication, consciousness is inconstant. That which is inconstant is stressful. That which is stressful has ceased and gone to its end. How many of you can get it? You need a pause to think about this. Let me explain to you. First, Venerable Sariputta explained to him five aggregate is not a being, it's not a self. Five aggregate is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. If you think five aggregate, if you think a person is five aggregate and five aggregate is suffering, now when he reached arahantship, no more ignorant, no more craving, where does he go? You should answer that which is stressful. What is stressful? Five aggregates. Why five aggregates are very stressful? So now that which is stressful has ceased. All the suffering has come to the end. This is the correct answer. This is the right view. So in this point, you see, there's not a person, not a self, not a being, no he, no she. Only suffering and the cessation of suffering. This is the right view. A person is made up by five aggregates, right? A person is conventional truth. Five aggregates are ultimate truth. Now we are talking about ultimate truth. And five aggregate through your vipassana meditation, through your insight meditation, you understand five aggregates are impermanent. What is impermanent? Even you use your theoretical thinking. What is impermanent? Is it happiness or suffering? Happiness or suffering? Suffering. And what is impermanent? Is suffering. So five aggregates are impermanent, therefore five aggregates are suffering, right? And now, because five aggregates for ordinary person, the five aggregates attached with ignorance and craving. But now for Arahant, he has removed that craving and ignorance, and that five aggregate, the suffering, come to the cessation. The suffering come to the cessation. So that which is stressful has ceased and gone to its end. So all the suffering come to the end only. This is the right view. This is the correct view. So now come back to the question, when an Arahant dies, where he goes, how should you answer? This question will be asked by many, many people. Then you should answer him. Five aggregate. Arahant is only a name, only a label. Arahant made up by five aggregate, right? And Arahant has already eradicated all the attachment, all the ignorance towards this five aggregate. And he understands all five aggregates are impermanent. And what is impermanent is suffering. So now suffering comes to the end. That is the answer. And I have no more further answer to this question. And I hope after listening to this talk, you will not develop fear. Buddha said this idea is very fearful, very fearful. And one of my students, after I tell him already, when the fire burn, do you understand? Do you know the fire is burning in front of you? He said yes. And when fire extinguish, do you understand fire extinguish in front of you? He said yes. And when fire extinguish, can we say where the can we say the fire go to the east, west, north, and north? He say she answered me cannot. Then she said that then this means nothing exists no more. Then if like that, I don't want to meditate anymore. So at the time, I feel very sorry. I think I should behave like Buddha, keep silent. If he asks me when Arahant dies, where Arahant goes, I should like Buddha keep silent. Because the truth sometimes is very frightening. The truth is not easy to accept. The truth is frightening. So this is the reason why sometimes Buddha prefer keep silent. And my student told me he doesn't want to meditate and let me feel so bad. So only for those who strongly cling to the idea of self, then the idea of non-self is very frightening. So long you do not cling to the idea of self, then when you reach such dhamma, you will feel so happy. So much happiness arises in you. You start to understand the dhamma. Everything is cause and effect. There's no a person. Everything is cause and effect. Buddha said, when avijja, when ignorance ceases, everything ceases. And the avijja is not a person. Craving is not a person. It's just a mental state. So what is going on is only continuity of consciousness. When that consciousness is supported by ignorance and craving, then the consciousness continue to go forward. But when that support, that ignorance and craving are completely uprooted, and that consciousness has nothing to hold on, has nothing to attach, nothing to hold on, that consciousness will stop. Just simple as this. Okay, so the most important words of the Buddha is Buddha said, formally what I teach is suffering, dukkha, and the cessation of dukkha. Formally and now, both formally and now, what I teach is suffering and the cessation of suffering. And in this process, there is no permanent soul. In this process, there's no one undergo suffering. Suffering exists, but no one undergo suffering. It's just a phenomena rising and passing away according to cause and conditions. This is the right view. Okay, I think I should stop here, and I believe you have many, many questions to ask.
Sorry, there's actually a few questions, brother. Dear teacher, please enlighten us as follow. Must one take up the road to be Arahant? The second question is, when Arahants die, where did your mind go to?
Where he go to? Wait. Let me tell you the second question first. So when Arahant die, where he goes again? Okay. I remember I explained one dharma, how to contemplate impermanent. This is my favorite. It's my specification. So I spend 1 hour to explain how to contemplate impermanent in your daily life. And I thought I explained it very clearly. I full of confidence. After that, come to the question and answer section. First person asks, sister, how to contemplate impermanent? Same like your question. I have spent 1 hour to tell you, and you ask me the question again. Therefore, when I first come up to this stage, I already told you, I may choose the wrong question. I may choose the wrong topic. If you want to know the answer, you have to listen to this talk again for 10 times. Okay, can you repeat the first question?
Actually, he has 4 questions. So the first question is, must one take up the road to be Arahant?
Okay, let me answer one by one. Before you become Arahant, you can practice as a lay person, no problem. You can practice as a lay person up to Anagami, third stage of sainthood. After Anagami, then you continue practice as Arahant, and when you achieve Arahant, then you will become a monk. Automatically, you want to become a monk because lay life is too gross for the state of Arahant. So you can practice as a lay person until Anagami, the time. Then you continue, when you become Arahant, then you can become monk, no problem.
Third question is, can a non-practitioner be an Arahant?
This question is not applicable.
Features of Arahant that lay person can identify with.
Say it again.
What are the distinct features of Arahant that lay person can identify with?
Okay, before I answer, let me tell a story first. In the ancient time, this is a real story. There was an old monk. Then he has one student, young monk. This young monk has been following for many, many years already. And one day, two of them, one teacher, one student, went out for alms food. Then after alms round, the young student tell the teacher. He says, sir, teacher, I think there's no Arahant in the world. Because it's so difficult to meet with an Arahant, he told his teacher. And his teacher said, even you live with Arahant, you may not know he's Arahant. And the teacher himself is Arahant. So this should be able to answer your question. Even the student who is a monk, who have so good Dhamma teaching, and follow him closely for so many years and still don't and searching for Arahant. The person who stay near him is Arahant, and he's searching for Arahant and think there's no Arahant in the world. This means that it's very difficult for non-Arahant to know who is Arahant unless you are Arahant. But if you can test him, you can test a person whether he's Arahant or not. But I would suggest you don't test. Otherwise, you accumulate a lot of unwholesome karma. Don't test. Arahant has no fear. So you can how to say, you can play ghost to try to frighten him. You can play ghost and frighten him, see whether he got fear or not. So you can try many ways to see whether he got fear or not. It's better to try to be an Arahant and not to search for Arahant. Right? It's better to try and to practice and make yourself an Arahant than searching Arahant everywhere. Okay.
The next question is it necessary or possible for an Arahant to exhaust his past karma totally before Parinibbana?
No. Mahamangalana is the best example. Mahamangalana is foremost in psychic power. But in his past, he has done one heavy karma. So during his last birth as Arahant and foremost in psychic power, so one day when he was meditating, many robbers come in, want to kill him. So for first time, he used his psychic power to escape. And after some time, this robber came back again, want to kill him. And for the second time, he used his psychic power to escape. And for the third time, and the robber came back again, and this time he also want to use his psychic power to escape, but he was unable to enter into fourth jhana. He cannot achieve fourth jhana. In order to perform psychic power, you must have fourth jhana. But he cannot attain fourth jhana, so he cannot perform his psychic power. He cannot fly away. He cannot fly away through roof or through keyhole anymore. So finally, all the robber came and beat him until his bones as tiny as grains. Okay? So no. Answer is no. Therefore, karma is very frightening. No one can escape from the ripening of karma unless he passed into parinibbana. Now, I would like to ask you a question. Why, when he passed to parinibbana and other karma, the unwholesome karma he previously performed, why cannot ripen? Why? Because no more rebirth. When there's rebirth, there's five aggregates, right? When no more rebirth, there's no five aggregates. Then how the result? The result want to attach, it must attach to five aggregates. Now no more five aggregates, the bad karma cannot bear its result because the result find no way to attach. No way to attach. So after parinibbana, all the karma become completely exhausted. Good or bad, all completely exhausted.
Buddhist, because it's tough to be a Buddhist, and this is something that I agree.
It takes a lot of courage and it takes a lot of strength because we depend on ourselves. Whereas for other religions, you know, we just refer, you know, everything to God. So you mentioned also that, you know, when Buddhist lay people, when they have problems, they will run to the teacher for advice. And the teachers, you have to be honest. So the teachers will probably say that, this is due to your karma and so forth. So for people in this position, right, the karma has been done. So the causes and so the conditions have ripened for the effect to be there, right? So what can they do to minimize, you know, the bad karma? This is a very practical application.
Okay, good. It's very easy, how to minimize that bad karma? Do more good. Do more good. Cultivate more kusala karma. When you cultivate more kusala karma, that unwholesome karma lost his power to mature. Because Buddha gave an example, a bowl of water, salty water. How to dilute the salty water? Add more water. So add more good deeds to your life. Add more, cultivate more wholesome karma so that the unwholesome karma become weaker and weaker because of your strong wholesome karma. Because your wholesome karma become more and more, so then unwholesome karma become weaker and weaker, then unwholesome karma has less opportunity to ripen. In case ripen already, as you say, sometimes misery ripen in your life already, and the monk told you that this due to your unwholesome karma in the past, we first must accept it. If you don't accept it, then your mind is full of unsatisfactory. Your mind is full of anger. Why me? So you must accept it. It's fair. Maybe past life I'm ignorant. I associate with unwise person, so I commit some misdeed. Now the karma ripen, the result fall onto me. Okay, I take it. Therefore, I say Buddhists must be courageous. Take it, accept it with equanimity and understanding. And also understand this bad karma also were exhausted one. We're exhausted. And before it exhausted, before bad karma exhausted, quickly do good. Do good is so easy for Singaporean, a rich country. Do some dana, charity. Keep your five precepts in your daily life. Listen, talk more to get more understanding. All this can help you to minimize the unwholesome effect. Okay, am I answering your question? Okay. Any other question? I thought you would have many questions to ask. Why not true? Let's say you already undertake five precepts. Why you undertake five precepts? Because you understand cause and effect, right? Karma and its result. So sometimes we break one of the karma. A person who already understands cause and effect, understand good beget good, bad beget bad. When he do unwholesome thing, he cannot do it very, how to call, very boldly. He cannot do it very openly, you know, because he already know it's not correct. So he cannot do it very openly one. So when he cannot do it very openly with strong volition, then the karma is weaker. Weaker. But for a person who do not take five precepts, and who also do not understand good beget good, bad beget bad, and he, when he do something bad, he do it with very strong volition. Very strong volition, because volition means karma. So when he do it with very strong volition together with ignorance, that karma is heavier. That karma is heavier. If a person already take five precepts and break one of the precepts, has heavier karma than those who do not take five precepts and do one of the bad thing. If it is so, no one want to take five precepts, right? What for I take five precepts? I better don't take any five precepts so that when I do something bad, my karma is lighter. Not logical at all. Not true. Not true. So sometimes when you listen something, you should use your wisdom to think correctly, logically. Okay.
Good evening, teacher. I have two questions. First question is, what is the difference between the Arahant and the Bodhisattva?
Arahant and
Bodhisattva.
Bodhisattva.
My second question is, how does the Arahant become a Bodhisattva?
Okay. What is the difference between Arahant and Bodhisattva? Okay. Bodhisattva is a one who inspired to become Buddha. So he has to practice 10 paramis. 10 paramis. And this take how long? For there are three types of Buddha. One is enlightened. One become Buddha through wisdom. So he has shorter period. He don't need so long time. But the period is 4 asankhaya and 100,000 kappa. So for any bodhisattva who practice 10 parami, but with strong wisdom, predominant in wisdom, then he will take 4 asankhaya and 100,000 kappa to become Buddha. And second type is bodhisattva who practice 10 parami if I'm not mistaken, faith, then he will take 8 asankhaya and 100,000 kappa. And for the third type, he as a bodhisattva, he practice 10 parami. While practicing 10 parami, all bodhisattva, they cannot reach any sainthood. He cannot become noble person, Arya. For all bodhisattva, before he attained Buddha, whatever life there may be, he is still ordinary person, not the noble one. Because he cannot become noble one, he cannot become Sotapan. Then after that, he practice 10 parami again and become Sakadagami. Then practice 10 parami, become, no, not possible. Why not possible? Because when you become Sotapan, you only have 7 lives to come. But to become Buddha, you need 4 asankhaya and 100,000 kappa. So not possible. For bodhisattva to become Arya in between, before become Buddha, is impossible. Okay. So the third one, need 16 asangkaya and 100,000 kapha. If the viriya effort is predominant. Okay. But for arahan, anyone can become arahan. As long as you have parami, as long as you try very hard and you have mature parami, you can become arahan. And when you become arahan, you cannot change already want to become Buddha. Once you become arahan, no, I say arahan, not enough. I want to become Buddha. For another few more time, I practice again 10 parami from arahan to become Buddha. That is impossible also. So this first question. Then the second question is what? Really? Forgot already.
Teacher, I think you answered
the
question. The second question is how does arahan become a bodhisattva?
Arahan cannot go stunt to become bodhisattva. Not possible. Just now, I have spent 1 hour talk to tell you arahan cannot come back already. Arahan, no more rebirth. So when he become arahan, after he dies, he cannot become bodhisattva again. If he want to become bodhisattva, then he should not practice up to arahanship. He should practice meditation, vipassana meditation up to sankhara upekha jnana, inside knowledge of equanimity. Up to that, before seeing nibbana, before become sotapanna, he should stop already. He stopped there. Then and he inspired to become bodhisattva, to inspire become Buddha. That is possible. Once he become arahan, there is no possible that he can come back and become bodhisattva. Okay?
The Buddha is an arahan, but an arahan may not be a Buddha. Can you help us understand what is the difference?
I will recommend you to read my book, Lanai Attribute of the Buddha. I tell what is the difference between arahan and Buddha. Defilement, arahan, Buddha also arahan. Right? But all arahan doesn't mean that they are Buddha. But why they call arahan? Because they have destroyed all the defilements. Buddha has destroyed all the defilements. Arahan Sariputta Moggallana also had destroyed all the defilements. For those who have destroyed all the defilements, they are called arahan. So Buddha also destroyed defilements, so Buddha also called arahan. But in order to become Buddha, first, they need to fulfill 10 parami for at least 4 asangkaya and 100% kapha. But other arahan no need so long, no need to practice so long time to fulfill 10 parami. And one is the special difference between arahan and Buddha is arahan has no residue, how to say? In Chinese we call 习气. Buddha is like water, pure water, keep with water without any smell. Arahan is like a bottle keep with wine. When you throw away the wine, the bottle still got some smell of wine smell. But Buddha has no. This wine smell is like their 习气, their residue. Their residual habit come from past life. Let's say, I give an example. Wacha Pirinda, or Pirinda, I forgot his name, Arahan. In his past life, he was born in Brahmin caste, high caste, Brahma, Brahmin, high caste. So he was reborn in high caste for successively 500 lifetimes. Then when that life, Buddha, during Buddha's lifetime, he became Arahant. But he still has this residual habit. So one day he saw a man, he called, "Wei, low caste, where are you going?" He called people low caste because in his past life, many, many lifetimes, he was born as high Brahmin. High Brahmin is very proud. So he used to call people low caste. So this residual karma still with him, even though he became Arahant. But for Buddha, no. Buddha has no this residual karma. And another special difference is Buddha has sabbe nyuta jnana. Sabbe nyuta jnana. Sabbe nyuta jnana means whatever he wants to know, he can know. Whatever Buddha wants to know, he can know. He can know your temperament, whether you are anger temperament, greed temperament, or delusion temperament. But for other arahants, they don't have this quality. They don't have this sabbeyuta jnana to know what type of meditation suitable for this person. Arahant have no this quality, but Buddha know. Oh, this person suitable to practice anapana, then I teach him anapana, and very soon he become arahant. So this special quality cannot find in arahant. So these are the few differences. Okay? Okay, last question. I think the first is to reflect the danger of sensual pleasures. Because layperson is your life, is accompanied or surrounded by sensual pleasures. These sensual pleasures, according to including eye, ear, nose, tongue, and also mind. Those person who have strong attachment to the family, to the sons, daughters, spouse, and so on, it's very difficult to renounce the world. So they should, if they want, they want to cultivate the renunciation parami, they should be very careful and very aware of this this attachment to the family. And also try to practice a life far away from enjoyment, from sensual pleasures through eye, ears, nose, tongue, body. Then gradually he can complete or accomplish his renunciation parami. Okay? Okay, I think enough for today. Whether you understand just now talk or not, you still clap the hand. Okay, let us transfer merit.
Etavata cha ammehi sampadang punya sampadang sappe deva sappe buddha sappe satta anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya akasata cha bhummatha devanaga mahidika punyatang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam chirang rakkantu desanam chirang rakkantu mang paranti.
Please follow after me.
Idang me punyang nipanasa pachayo hotu. Idang me punyang sabasatanang dema. sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
I think I have one thing forgot to mention. I believe many of you have got my book. But for those who have not yet got my book, I'd like to recommend you to get few copy of my book. As I mentioned before, giving a talk, owing to the limited time, I cannot explain in very detail. But when writing a book, I have a lot of time, space, so I can quote from many sutta and write down and compile it into a book. So the book will be more clear and more in detail compared to my talk. So if you are interested to know more, especially how to achieve the state of Noble One, and how to practice Vipassana meditation, how to cultivate all the good wholesome karma, then I would like to recommend you to get some of my book and read it not one time, at least 4 or 5 times. Similarly, this type of dharma is so profound, therefore no teacher want to teach. No one want to talk such topic on. I give myself a hard time only. But if 10%, if 10% among you can understand, it's also enough. So that next time you can answer other people's question. Okay? So hopefully you have chance to read this again and again. Then finally you can completely understand what Buddha mean, no self. And to understand no self, you must have thorough understand of dependent origination. To say no self without explaining dependent origination is also not correct. Therefore, when Vajragotha asked Buddha, is there no self? Buddha no answer. Now, if I say yes, there's no self, then this side with the annihilation view, which Buddha himself rejected. So if you only tell people there's no self, not correct also. So in order to explain no self, you have to explain dependent origination, cause and effect. Only then that no self is not so frightening. Otherwise, you tell people there's no self without telling people the process of cause and condition, that is very frightening. Okay? So thank you and enough for today.
Very grateful.